After a years-long legal battle, Argentina could return to the global credit market. From Marketplace in Washington, I'm Amy Scott, in for David Brancaccio. Early this morning, Argentina's Senate approved a deal to settle a long-running legal dispute with a group of U.S. hedge funds. The deal allows the country to issue up to $12 billion in bonds to pay off its creditors. Andrew Walker is economics correspondent for the BBC and joins us now. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Amy.
So talk about the significance of this milestone for Argentina. It's been, what, 15 years since it had access to the global credit markets?
Yeah, it was right at the end of 2001 that Argentina defaulted on its debts in the middle of a very serious economic crisis. What then happened was that it went through negotiations with the creditors, and the great majority of them accepted a restructuring. But there was a minority of creditors who refused. A couple of months ago, the Argentine government agreed to offer them more, not everything they were seeking. Problem in terms of the Argentine legal setup was that it was a deal that was basically banned by legislation that had been passed under previous presidents. And so what we've had is the repeal of that legislation. There is now a basis for that deal with the holdout creditors to go ahead.
And what could this deal approved by the Senate early this morning mean for the Argentine economy?
It does mean that there's now a very good chance that Argentina will have access once again to international financial markets. That gives Argentina a new access to new funds to finance the government. It'll make it more attractive, I think, for international investors to get involved in Argentina. Of course, there are critics who would say that this is a terrible deal, that it encourages investors to adopt this kind of tactic of suing governments that are in financial distress. And some would, I think, say that the last thing Argentina is to go building up new debt, having had such a bad record with suffering under debt problems in the past.
Andrew Walker with the BBC, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Amy.
Representatives of more than 50 countries are in Washington today for the White House's Nuclear Security Summit. The investigation of the terrorist attacks in Brussels last week has raised concerns about the vulnerability of nuclear facilities. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer looks at how strict security rules apply to the private sector.
Armed security guards are required at nuclear power plants. There are rules for universities handling radioactive material, too.
My radioactive sources are stored in safes that are bolted to the floor so that the sources are not easily stolen.
That's Howard Hall. He teaches nuclear security at the University of Tennessee. He says terrorists looking for nuclear material would steal it from a hospital, which is more open to the public.
Someone could figure out what room is that gamma source in if I were wanting to steal it.
But hospitals are supposed to restrict access to radioactive material, according to Scott Burnell, a spokesman for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. He also says facilities using nuclear material have to have a culture of vigilance.
Where anyone feels free to raise concerns about how something is done.
Burnell says some nuclear power plants have received warnings for what he calls a chilling effect, where employees don't feel safe bringing complaints about security to management. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
A new report from the American Association of University Professors finds that efforts to crack down on sexual harassment on campus may be hampering academic freedom. The group says Title IX, the federal education law that bans gender-based discrimination, is being expanded and enforced in ways that limit classroom discussion and research and is costing some professors their jobs. Risa Lieberwitz is the general counsel for the AAUP and helped put together the report.
Faculty who are in disciplines that address things like sex and sexuality, gender studies, are particularly vulnerable to accusations of hostile environment in the classroom because they are dealing with uncomfortable subjects in certain instances. And we think that's has a huge negative impact on the ability to take seriously issues of gender equality and gender inequality and address those in the context of higher education.
And you argue that some of this has to do with the way that universities are treating students as customers. They've become more service-oriented. Can you talk about what you mean by that?
Well, what we've seen over the last number of years that goes beyond the situation of sexual harassment are universities that are, as we called them, corporatized university, a more top-down kind of hierarchical approach to decision-making, as well as this sort of consumer orientation that's very much focused on the public image and publicity around the university. Along with that comes a risk management kind of approach. And so universities, to avoid bad publicity, are taking an approach that's overly broad in trying to regulate hostile environment, again, in a way that intrudes on academic freedom.
What do you see as some solutions that can preserve academic freedom but also, you know, protect students and faculty from harassment?
One of the recommendations is that the Office for Civil Rights, which enforces Title IX, should return to its earlier policies, which stressed academic freedom and stressed that having hurt feelings or finding speech offensive is not enough to make it sexual harassment. We also recommend that faculty be brought into the process of creating and implementing policies, with faculty being active members of that shared governance.
All right. Risa Lieberwitz with the American Association of University Professors. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
In Washington, I'm Amy Scott with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.